Welcome to Always Hold On to Smallville. In this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of the Young Superman series that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB/the CW. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and I'm joined once again by our friend Daniel Prue. What's up, Daniel?
Oh, how's it going?
Good, man. Good. It's good to have you back on the podcast. I guess you were on, your last episode was Obscura, so actually not too long ago in the chronology of the episodes here. But time-wise, it's been a while.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. Excited to talk some more Smallville.
So season two, right? We're in season two now. It's a whole different show, really. And this is our last episode is Vortex, and that had the responsibility of wrapping up the cliffhanger from season one, Tempest, and that almost felt like the 22nd episode of season one, and Heat here, season two, the second episode of season two. Really does feel like, okay, this is the new, almost status quo. This is the new feel that the new season is going to have. And this was just a fun episode. I'm really excited to talk about it.
Yeah, I love these episodes, the ones where he gets new powers. Those are always highlights for me.
Yeah, exactly, because, that's something that a young Superman show can talk about that obviously you don't encounter him when he's older Superman. So these are stories that are specifically could only be told in the context of a show like Smallville. And they, for the most part, they do a good job with them. So, you know what, let's jump right into it. Heat.
Hi, Clark. How was school?
It was different. Do we like different?
There was a fire during biology class. It's okay. Nobody was hurt. I stopped before it spread.
Well, it sounds like we should be proud of you.
Except I think I started it.
Wait, you want to explain that, please?
I started to feel hot. My eyes started to burn. All of a sudden, the spot I was staring at burst into flames.
Just by looking at it?
Hello? Hi, I'm Clark. I'm the kid who can lift up tractors and see through walls.
Son, hang on just a second. What exactly was going on when this happened?
We just met our new biology teacher, and we were watching a film.
An educational film?
A sex educational film.
This could get very complicated.
Clark, it's possible that whatever's happened has some sort of hormonal connection.
Yes.
Heat is the second episode of Smallville's second season, and it aired on October 1st, 2002. It was written by Mark Verheiden and directed by James Marshall. So we're back to school. 3 months have passed since the events of Tempest and Vortex, and they just jump right over the summer vacation, which makes sense calendar-wise, because obviously the TV shows come out during the school season, so... and that's part of what I was saying earlier about how I feel like this is like the reset. Now we're in season two. How do you feel about that, Dan? Would you like to see more of the summer? Are you glad they just kept with the calendar?
Well, it's something that they do kind of pretty much every year, isn't it? They kind of, some big event happens and you kind of miss those 3 months. I guess it makes sense. I never really worry about what's going on during the summer because, I was on summer vacation at the time too, being in high school, so I was like, that's fine. I don't have time to watch TV anyways. So, yeah, I mean, I never really thought about it that much. It doesn't bother me or anything. It's nice because it kind of reestablishes, what's going on and kind of gives you a little bit maybe of a refresher if you had been spending the last 2 months in the sun. So,
right, it's not like Star Trek because we're Star Trek buddies here, me and Dan, and where everything, it's like if you look at like the star dates and the seasons and all that, because Star Trek doesn't subscribe to some kind of like Earth calendar. New Year's Eve every year must really suck for all those guys because all this terrible stuff happens at the end of every season, and then it's the first of the year. I'm like, all right, it's all resolved. Let's move on. So it's a different kind of calendar where they correlate here. But Alana is making video messages to send to Whitney, who's overseas because he joined the Marines, and Clark's trying to make one, but he kind of sucks at it. Pete steps up, does a pretty good job, and it's funny this video camera has the blinking REC, and that is so like Hollywood shorthand for home video, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I know, speaking of Star Trek, there's an episode of Voyager where Neelix has a talk show.
Oh yeah,
you know, mm-hmm, what I'm talking about. And it has the blinking REC, and it's like, that's the 24th century, man. They're not going to still be doing that unless that Instagram filter really caught on. Have you seen that? I've seen it. It's like an Instagram filter or some kind of filter where you can make stuff you shoot on your phone look like a VHS tape.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know if it's Instagram filter or not, but it's like an app, I think, too. And some people are really, really into nostalgia.
Right, the people that collect records, and who am I to talk, though? I collect Laserdiscs, but that's a completely different, that's a really different conversation. So they're making these videos, and, you know, Chloe comes by, and it's established that this is really the first time that her and Clark have talked since, like, the last episode. She went to Metropolis, she had her internship at the Daily Planet, that went well. But she's back. You know, her dad had been laid off from the Luther Corp plant. And that's a dangling plot thread from season one. They really haven't addressed yet. Lionel closed the Luther Corp plant, but Chloe kind of offhands mentioned that her dad decided to give LexCorp another shot. And that's huge because LexCorp is the name of the, you know, Lex's company in the comic books. And Smallville, it's Luther Corp. So I feel like they need to kind of clear up what's going on there. We get there eventually in season two, but that's kind of a random offhand thing to just throw in there. I know it's a TV trope of people not talking over breaks and stuff like that. But that's what I'm saying about the break. It's just so unnatural for, like, these best friends to not talk this whole time.
Yeah, it did feel forced. And she's like, oh, yeah, you got all the emails you sent, you know, nudge, yeah. Wink, wink. And, yeah, that was a little weird. It's like, isn't she, like, an hour away or 2 hours away or something, whatever it is?
It's this Metropolis gets closer and closer every season, Dan.
Yeah, yeah. I remember it being 3 hours away, and then you could see it from the field, and I don't know. But so I was like, yeah, I mean, like, we've seen you, like, text, and we've seen IMs and stuff. There's no reason you would go a whole summer without talking. Although, to be fair, they had a pretty awkward situation happen, so it might have been more avoidance than anything.
Probably subconscious on Clark's part, but not subconscious on Chloe's part, because she's still having some issues with what happened in the season finale with them running off. So, and then she makes up some lame story about how she met a hot intern that made her forget all about Smallville just to get a rise out of Clark. And typical Clark, he just kind of, like, doesn't know how to take it. She walks off.
I thought for a second, I was like, because I haven't watched Smallville in a long time. I thought, like, is she already referencing Jimmy? And then,
see,
of course,
okay.
No.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because here, she acts like she made it up, but then when she tells Lana about that in, like, season four, I believe it was, she does mention that this is when she hooked up with Jimmy Olsen, or Henry James Olsen, should I say. That's like a retcon and then a non-retcon and then a re-retcon. I don't know, but you're right. They kind of played fast and loose with if Chloe really made that up or not. So following this little exchange, this is our only scene, Dan, of our main characters in class in the entirety of Smallville. We've seen him in gym. We've seen him at the talent. I always mix up the torch and the talent. Two T names, man. It's so easy to confuse. But we see him at the talent. I did it again. We see them at the torch a lot, and we see him in, you know, gym class or, like, at the pool or on the track, but we never see them in a classroom. And this is the only time we do that. And I feel like this is a biology class, right? So, you know, for all of us who went to American public school, you probably remember biology classes. They have, like, the big tall tables and all that stuff. You know, they got your Bunsen burners and your sinks and stuff. So I feel like you could put a 26-year-old now at this point, Tom Welling, at one of those desks, and it doesn't look as ridiculous as if you tried to cram him into, like, a little desk, like in a normal classroom.
Yeah, that's crazy to me. That I mean, I guess thinking back, I can't remember any other time. But that's funny that it's literally the only time they've been in class.
I guess that makes sense too. But I'm pretty sure I'm not.
It makes sense too, because, you know, the likelihood of them all being in the same class. Although, of course, they are from a town called Smallville, so I suppose it's possible.
There is only one class, Dan.
Yeah.
So we meet our new biology teacher, Mrs. Atkins. She's played by Krista Allen, who is, you know, just a pretty familiar face to, you know, television. I know her best from after Smallville. She was on a show called What About Brian? Did you ever see this show, Dan? What About Brian?
I don't think I've ever even heard of it.
It had it was on ABC for a couple of seasons, and it starred the older kid from Seventh Heaven.
Oh, the guy?
Yeah, yeah, the older son. Barry Watson is his name.
Yeah.
And and she was his girlfriend on there for a few episodes. And this is funny because it was just a couple of years after the Smallville appearance. So she's been in that. Apparently she was in an episode of The X-Files, which I must have not seen or had forgotten about. She was on some soap operas before. She was on Charmed. She was on Baywatch. So she has a good, you know, good standing career. And look, she's a very beautiful woman, right? And Clark notices this. Pretty much everyone notices this. And the reactions are very appropriate to if you saw a teacher who look like this come into your class, right?
Yeah, and I think part of it also is the ridiculous way in which she was dressed. Like that you would never, ever, ever have someone dressed like that in a teaching role. WBCW sexy teacher time for a little bit there. And it was a little over the top, yeah. But yes, she's very attractive.
and there's a heat wave going on throughout Smallville as well. So that's another subplot that ties it all together. So people are like sweating and she's like rubbing her sweat, you know, on her chest and her legs. And it just, it's so funny to see, like, especially Chloe and Lana's reaction to this. They're like, are you kidding me?
Yeah. Even though they're like all sweaty and, you know, yeah, for a second too, when that started happening and everybody was commenting on how hot it was, I got it confused. I got this episode confused with the first one with Perry White. That's the one with the solar flares, right?
Oh, right. And Perry, right.
And I was thinking, oh, is there like a solar flare going on? And that's just where my mind went. And that's what it reminded me of. But yeah, clearly they're going through a heat wave now. So
right. Well, which you know, I live in Houston, Texas, and a heat wave is like 100 plus degrees, right? So in Smallville, I'm guessing the heat wave is what, like 85? <You know.
laughs> Well, especially where they film, that's for sure.
Yeah, because they film up in Canada, so you know, I'm sure they were like spraying, you know, just water on everybody to make it look like they were sweating. Now it's funny when people say it's a heat wave and they're wearing like blue jeans, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm like look, shorts, anyone? I don't think anyone ever wore shorts on Smallville unless they went to like the lake or something or went swimming. But if you're sweating all day, probably just try some shorts on. But you know, they start, it's biology class, so they start showing this, of course, right? It's a sex ed video.
Oh boy.
What did you think of this video, Dan?
It was like a sex ed video from like the 70s or something. And you know, the whole scene to me is so over the top. Like we get it. Like, you're not being even a little subtle about any of this. You know, with the heat wave and the sexy teacher and then the sex ed film. You know, something's going to happen. And it's just, it was just a little much. Like, it could have been like, oh, it was just a mile. It was a very pretty teacher was making eyes at Clark or something. Like, that would have been enough. But they had to add on, like, layer after layer of ridiculousness on top of it. So it was hard to take that scene seriously.
Yeah, the heat wave itself was a little unnecessary, right? Because we already had, you don't need that. That had nothing to do with triggering the heat vision, you know. But you know, I will say that the film from the 70s, which is probably accurate, it is talking about pheromones, and that's like actually, you know, cleverly placed exposition, because that's where everything ties together about the pheromones. So they're watching this video, and Clark's kind of eyeing the teacher who's dressed provocatively and is carrying herself in a provocative way. So you know, really can't blame Clark for, you know, checking her out. And, you know, he starts to feel something come over him, and boom, we have heat vision, right? Heat vision bursts from his eyes, sets the screen on fire. There's a fire, everybody has to get out of there. And this is a big power to give Clark, you know. This is one of Superman's probably most famous powers.
Yeah, and if I remember my Superman lore correctly, it's also his most powerful, uses most of his energy.
Yeah, so here's what executive producer Al Goff had to say about introducing heat vision. Now, before we get too far, we are now in season two, my friend. So this quote comes from Smallville, The Official Companion, season two by Paul Simpson, available wherever books are sold. But getting back to what Goff had to say, actually, at one point we introduced it in the pilot. It was in a very early draft of the script, again with the idea of it arriving in the sex ed class. But then we thought, why are we spoiling this? Let's save it. It also took us a season until we saw, in terms of visual effects, a heat vision that we liked. We didn't want to do the red beams out of the eyes. X-ray vision had always been see-through vision with Superman, and we wanted X-ray vision. In the same way, we wanted heat vision with this. Miles Miller goes on to elaborate, it wasn't laser vision. We wanted to have a power that Clark could use in front of other people. They wouldn't necessarily be aware he was using it. It was almost invisible. We liked the idea of distorting the frame and having a heat ripple.
Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was a really clever way to do it, because up until the time, you know, of course, the Superman films in the 70s and 80s, and then the animated stuff always depicted him with just red beams out of his eyes. I thought it was a really clever way to show that he was giving off this heat. And like they mentioned, he could be more discreet about it. And I kind of always figured he would still get the red beams. Like, I just figured that he wasn't using it to its full potential yet. You know, he just got this ability, so it was probably a little weaker. So, like, I imagine, like, if he squinted really hard, you know, or whatever he has to do, then it would eventually just be so hot or whatever, it would just radiate red. But, you know, and now in the newer films, we're back to the red beams, which is fine. It's cool. It's cool. It's a cool look, that's for sure. But here in Smallville, I think it was great. I think it was a really smart way to do it.
Yeah, as they said, it's heat vision, right? And what better way to visualize that? And you're right. In the Christopher Reeve movies, right, you'll see Clark use it through his glasses, which doesn't make any sense. Yeah. And then you're like, do people not see Clark Kent red beams coming out of his eyes? So I guess we're led to believe that that was always something that we're not supposed to see, you know? And, you know, Superman Returns, which came out during the production of Smallville, it actually copied Smallville's heat vision and made it a little more red. Yep. But it still had the kind of wavy heat ripples. And as Smallville went on, to your point, Dan, that, you know, as Clark became more powerful, the heat vision did have more like orange, red, you know, and yellow to it, but it still maintained that kind of heat, you know, ripple disturbance. And I really like that visual look for the heat vision, absolutely. So we go to the opening credits, we come back, and, you know, everyone's evacuated the school because, you know, there's a fire. And Lex drives up, and he comes to check on, not Clark, but his fiancé, Desiree Atkins, huh?
Yeah, and Clark is very surprised by this, as is the audience, I assume.
Well, apparently Clark has been talking to no one over the summer vacation, because he hasn't talked to Chloe, he doesn't know Lex is engaged. Like, get with it, man, you know? Yeah.
He's been just doing farm work.
After the storm, yeah, there was so much to do. I'm like, Clark, you could have done all that in like in a day. Like, what are you talking about, right?
It takes you 5 minutes to do everything. So I don't know what you've been doing, but
exactly. Lex, not only, you know, he checks on Desiree and Clark's, you know, obviously taken aback by this. And then Lex also says, like, oh, I would have sent this over by messenger, but since I'm here, he gives Clark an invitation to his wedding, which is tonight. You know,
yeah.
Which is, you know, pretty, it's moving pretty fast, but that's, you know, that's all part of the plot of the episode, so that all, it all makes sense, and, you know, ask Clark to be his best man, so, you know, we have our, you know, add it to the Smallville tally board, folks, wedding number one, so there have been many, I could actually do its own category on just Lex weddings, because Lex gets married multiple times over the course of the show, but we're going to do just weddings, because... there'll be a lot. It'll be interesting to see how many weddings actually take place on this show. But this is wedding number one. Before the wedding, though, we start to understand what's going on with Desiree, because Lex wants to have a prenup with Desiree, as any, you know, reputable businessman would like to have, right?
Any responsible billionaire would, yeah, right?
And she talks him out of it, and then we see some kind of, you know, energy come out of her mouth and into his, and we get like, oh, okay, I see what's going on. She's some kind of meteor freak, so...
But it's not green energy, because it's sexy energy. So,
yes, good call, right? Because every time, I believe in season one, every time we saw something like this, it was green, like the handshake guys in Hug. They had green energy, but like you said, it's sexy energy.
Yeah, so it's got to be a different color.
But and on the way to the wedding, Clark talks to his parents about what happened at school today. And they have this awkward moment where they're talking about, okay, what was going on? And he's like, well, we were watching a film. And Martha's like, an educational film? Clark says, a sex educational film. Now they all start to kind of awkwardly realize what might be going on here.
Yep.
And then it just, and this episode, like, and it just epitomizes what Smallville is all about. Just awkwardness of growing up with superpowers. The parents play a good role. The power plays into the story. Like the whole through line here with Clark and his parents figuring this out is so great. And they handle it so well, I think.
Yeah. It. You know, I was a little uncomfortable watching it too. I'm like, man, if I had this issue, I would not want to talk to my parents about it. But, you know, Clark literally has no one else to talk to, no one he can confide in. And it shows the strength of their relationship as well. And they're, you know, they realize it's awkward too. And they realize it's uncomfortable for their son, but they try to find a solution, and which is good and smart. And I like that a lot.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we do get to see the wedding here. Clark is seeing, you know, Lex and Desiree cut their cake, and then him and Chloe strike up a conversation. Interesting that Chloe was invited to this wedding. And then when Lex gets married again at the end of the season, she's not invited.
Very interesting. Also, apparently his mom baked the cake. I didn't know. I mean, I knew she, you know, cooked and stuff, but that is like a professional level cake. I didn't know she did that on this side.
That's true. I missed that. You're right. But he does say, oh, next thing I know, my mom's making Lex's wedding cake. Yeah, there's a difference between cooking apple pies in your oven
Yep, and that thing that she made, apparently.
But hey, it was last minute, right? He was just, Lex was calling in all the favors. But, you know, Chloe, and you know, my guess here of why Chloe is at this wedding is maybe Lex invited all his employees from, you know, the now LexCorp plant. And as we know, Chloe's dad works there. So I'm going to say that's why she was at this wedding and not at his next wedding. Spoilers. Like, Lex gets married again. But, you know, Chloe and Clark have a little conversation here about, you know, hey, things were kind of awkward earlier. Are we cool? And obviously things are not cool with Chloe. No. But Clark is just... It's a constant thing in this show, and I do like it how just like inexperienced and dopey he is with relationships.
Yeah, he does not pick up on the most obvious signs of discomfort, but it's kind of funny to watch him do that. And then, you know, maybe later on, if he ever becomes bumbling reporter Clark Kent, you can kind of see where he got his practice from.
Yeah, he can tap into that because he has life experience that way. Exactly. I thought it was ironic because they're talking about, you know, pheromones and chemistry, because they're like, man, this all happened so fast between Lex and Desiree, and Chloe says, it's chemistry, Clark. Some people have it, others don't. And that implies that her and Clark don't have chemistry, but actually, of all the characters on the show, I feel like, you know, female characters, I feel like Clark and Chloe, Tom Welling and Allison Mack have the best chemistry, especially at this point in the show. So I just thought that was kind of ironic that they use that line here.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And it's, especially later on, once they give up the whole I'm in love with you, Clark kind of stuff. I love the friendship that they develop. And I do think that they have fantastic chemistry.
So yeah, then, you know, Lex comes over to talk to Clark for a few minutes, and he says, quit staring, Clark, you'll burn your eyes out, because he's staring at Desiree, which is a pretty funny line, pretty clever line about, you know, being with heat vision and all.
Yeah.
and we kind of established that Lex had gone on like a business trip, and he's come back, and you know, he met Desiree on his business trip, and now she's his wife. So I guess Clark had been talking to Lex, but he'd been gone out of town for 2 weeks. So, you know, it's cool. It's all good. I'll allow it. So our next scene here is Clark goes to the Talon because he had not recorded his video message to Whitney. And, you know, Lana and him say, hey, come by the Talon later. So he comes by and records the video message to Whitney. And they talk about, you know, if Lana had left a message to Whitney or not. And she pretty much implies that she's probably going to break up with him, right?
Yeah. Pretty much, yeah.
And we get to see that more on that later, right? Because we can see that at the end of the episode. But they start to have kind of steamy, I don't know, is it a passionate conversation? I'll say it's an intense conversation. How about that, Dan? I think that's fair to say.
I would say it's going to heat up at least.
I see what you did there. So it's enough to get Clark, should I say, aroused?
steamy, yeah. Steamy.
So we see that the heat vision start coming back, and he tries to fight it, but it bursts out of his eyes, and he starts a fire at the Talon. And you know, there's fire number two in 2 days, so things are starting to look suspicious for Clark. And you know, next time we see him, he's hiding out in the barn. Jonathan finds him, and he's really, like, you know, worried about what's going on.
You know, I don't understand why he doesn't put his hand in front of his eyes. I feel like that would be a reasonable solution, since his hand can't get burned, and it'll just kind of stop, I guess. I don't know if it would bounce off or something, but he doesn't really... he's flustered, and he doesn't know what to do, but I just feel like he could have super sped out of there or put his hand in front of his face, or there's a lot of things he could have done. Looked at the ground or something, I don't know. But it's okay, I understand. It's for the plot.
I did feel like maybe he could have tried a little harder. As well, I'm right there with you, Dan. It's funny. His dad has kind of figured it out. He's like, well, son, I think I know what's triggering this. And we get a great just scene here where they set up the scarecrow out in the field, and Jonathan's like, all right, Clark, I want you to think about exactly what you're thinking about when these things happened. And he's like standing right behind him, and he kind of puts his hand on his shoulder, and Clark's like, Dad, it's gonna be easier if I was alone.
Awkward. But, you know, here's the thing. I love this bit and the next little montage we get of him with the candles and all this stuff. I actually, I wish it was a little longer. I wish it was like kind of a thing throughout the episode, like him slowly getting better at controlling it. Because by the end, like, he's like lighting tiny candles on fire and doing all these, you know, really precise stuff. But I really love the execution of it because it just shows how he's mastering this ability.
Yeah, I would have liked more of a montage or something. We do just cut to commercial and come back, and yep. He's like, all right, I figured it out. But I got to say about the scene with the scarecrow here when he's practicing heat vision. I love the Elvis song. They use a remix of an Elvis song, A Little Less Conversation. And it just, it's so just, I don't know. It doesn't, I don't know why they came up with that song and put it here, but it just fits the mood of what they're going for so well, I thought.
Yeah, I love, they hit the nail on the head a lot with the music in this show. So yeah, I laughed very hard when I heard that too. It's good.
Yeah, man, soundtrack of my life, the music of this show, I'll tell you what. So Clark, you know, like, as I said, we cut to commercial, we come back, and Clark's like, yep, I figured it out, we're good. And he's still practicing some, though, as you said, Dan, he's practicing on these candles and stuff in his loft late at night, and Desiree comes by to pretty much seduce him, and, you know, it doesn't, much like, I keep going back to the guys from Hug, the handshake salesman guys, as a comparison to this, because it's kind of a similar power in a more platonic way.
Yeah.
But it's the same kind of thing of persuasion, and it doesn't work on Clark, and the same thing here, does not, Desiree's powers do not work on Clark, and he you know, turns her down, which, I mean, that must have been pretty tough, huh?
Yeah, even without her abilities, that shows the strength of character, yeah, for sure. You know, here's the thing, though. They cherry pick what can work on Clark and what can't sometimes, and it's not always consistent.
Well, I know magic always works on him, and that's established in the comic books. Like, what else are you thinking of?
Oh, man, I am not going to be able to come up with anything specific right now. But a lot of times when these people have
site-specific examples, Dan. No.
I told you, I haven't watched the show in a while. So, and maybe my memory is foggy and wrong. But I just remember, like, you know, a lot of times these people have the kryptonite powers. It seems hit or miss whether or not it's going to work on him. And I can't think of any off the top of my head.
You know, that's true, though, because I'll have to keep an eye out for that moving forward. Because kryptonite usually makes him weak, but it's all these things about under the influence and stuff. Oh, and thank you I'm glad we brought this up. Under the influence, that's another category on the Smallville tally board. And it happens, yeah. See, the way I'm going to have to count it here is, although there's several instances of it, I'm only going to have to count it, like, per character. So Desiree has obviously put Lex under the influence, so that's a plus one for that, where Lex is acting out of character because he is under the influence of something else. It's not necessarily mind control, because I feel like mind control is different than under the influence. See, this is where Smallville, it really starts to borrow from itself quite frequently, right? Because this is a little bit the guys from Hug, it's a little bit the Nicodemus flower, you know, for mm-hmm. all the passionate mm-hmm. behavior. So it's a little bit of this, a little bit of that. But I'm going to call, I think it's fair to call this under the influence. So it's plus one for Lex already in this episode. Didn't get a plus one on Clark, though. But so Clark is telling Chloe about this the next day, and she just kind of laughs it off, right?
As you would. Like, if your friend came and told you this, you know, you would not believe them for a second. But
yeah. He says, Clark says, she has some strange hold on Lex. And Chloe says, gee, I wonder what that could be.
Yeah, that was a great line. I loved that. It's not just because she's hot, man. It was good.
Oh, man. And this is great. These kids are in high school, right? And this is embracing that. This is how they would talk. This is how they would react. I love it. I love it.
Yeah, it's because, seriously, if your friend came and, like, oh, that hot biology teacher, man, she tried to hit on me and I turned her down. Like, yeah, get the heck out of here, man. No way.
I do wonder, though, you know, we live in this day and age. Gosh, this episode is, what, almost 15 years old, right? And, you know, it's played for comedy and all that for the most part, until people start trying to murder each other. It's played for comedy. But I wonder if they would do that today. Like, if there was an episode of, like, you know, Supergirl or The Flash where, hey, this you know, sexy teacher tries to seduce her students. Like, that's, I don't know. Like, because yeah. You hear so many stories about that stuff these days.
It is flirting a pretty dangerous line, because that, you know, that's assault on a minor, basically. And the only person that actually kind of gets really upset about it is Martha.
As she would. Yeah. Well, we'll get there in a minute. But yeah, as she would. Right. So that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know. Like the whole Clark interference about the whole sex talk was uncomfortable, like, in a fun way. This stuff was kind of uncomfortable in a, ooh, I don't know how I feel about this way. So,
yeah, you're right. I think you're right. I think if it was written today, it would be different, because I think, you know, people are just a little more conscious of that sort of thing.
Yeah, they wouldn't have made her a teacher, I feel. They would have found some other way to introduce her into Clark's life.
Yeah, she very easily could have just been, you know, Lex's girlfriend. Like, she didn't have to be. The only reason that I'm sure the only reason they made her a teacher was because of that that scene they wanted to put, that they mentioned
sex ed
in the pilot. Yeah, so I'm sure that's literally the only reason she is a teacher. But
So Clark goes to, you know, talk to Lex about this. He shows up and they're having like a vague conversation. So at first you think, oh, Lex knows about this too. And he's happy Clark has, you know, come to talk to him about it. But it turns out Desiree told Lex that Clark's the one that initiated this with her. And Clark's kind of taken aback and doesn't know what to say. And, you know, she's basically playing them against each other. And I guess what her long game was, okay, she saw that Clark had, you know, been checking around in class. So she said, okay, I'm going to use this kid against Lex. And Lex already knows him, so that'll make it a lot easier. Because as we find out over the course of the episode, she's kind of a black widow. She's a gold digger, you know. And she just is going to go from rich guy to rich guy using her powers of persuasion to get what she wants. So it's always good to see Clark and Lex at odds. I enjoy that, even in these early episodes where they're still friends. I like the situations that cause them to be in conflict with each other.
It's almost like the characters were built to be at odds against each other or something like that. But I must be talking silly talk right now.
Perhaps so, Dan. Perhaps so. So Clark and Chloe, what else they've digged up? Yeah, what they found out about Desiree is she changed her name to Desiree Atkins. She, that different identity. She grew up in Smallville and changed her name when she left, and that's something that Lex was unaware of. So he tries to confront Desiree about it when Clark leaves. He's like, will you explain this? You can see him trying to fight it with common sense, you know, trying to fight the power of the pheromones. He can't do it. She overcomes him with more pheromones, and he cannot get the answers to the questions he wants. So moving on, Chloe and Lana have a scene together, and they're friends now, apparently, huh, Dan?
Yeah, that was weird. It was fine, but it was just kind of like, oh, okay, they're being real, real chummy, and then now they're talking about Clark, and that's interesting too. So
that's also a Bechdel test fail.
Oh yeah, that's true. I wouldn't even thought of that. Well, they started out not, didn't they? Didn't they start talking about something else?
But then it immediately went there, right?
Yeah,
I think so. The Bechdel test is not some open and shut case, but I think, you know, if it's one scene and it eventually turns to talking about a boy, then it's a fail,
yeah,
right? And this is their one scene, and they eventually talked about Clark. Now, not to say they haven't been on friendly terms, and they are friends, but they are quickly elevating towards, like, BFFs, simply because of the two female teenagers on the show. Although, I do like, you know, to wrap up their conversation about Clark, Lana says, let's define ourselves by what we do, not who we date, or don't date.
Yeah, no, I thought in my head, I'm like, you know, that's probably good advice for the writers.
That's exactly what I had in my notes. I said, I wish the show would have agreed with her.
Yeah, like maybe the people who wrote that line should have taken a look in the mirror, and that would have been nice for them. But
exactly, because it's a great sentimentality, yeah. But Smallville does not follow it at all. So then Lex shows up to close the talent, because he's using the fire kind of as an excuse to say, you know what, the talent was just barely breaking even. Bad investment. I'm using my buyout clause. Closing the talent. You have 24 hours to get out. Lana him kind of have a back and forth about this, because it's really just out of nowhere and pretty unfair for Lex to do this. But I love what he says. And obviously he's under the influence of Desiree, right? So he's being more hardcore about this stuff. But he says, and frankly, I have to question the judgment of a partner who causes thousands of dollars in damage when entertaining friends after hours.
Which is actually,
you know, he's absolutely right.
Yeah, which is actually something he should be concerned about. That is something that, you know, that's a problem. And, you know, you mentioned that you like when the show pits Clark and Lex against each other. I just like it when it lets Lex be bad. And this scene is just Lex being just a jerk, man. And Michael Rosenbaum is so charming most of the time that you like him. But when he like goes into just, you know, mean guy Lex Luthor, it's awesome. He's so good at it. And I love to see it.
Mm-hmm. Same here, man. Same here. So Clark finds out about this and he goes to confront Desiree because he knows that, you know, she's the one responsible for this. And she threatens him, and then Clark doesn't back down, and, you know, this is escalating, so she decides to frame Clark for another fire. Because, you know, Clark has been at a fire, you know, 2 days in a row, two separate events, so this would be number three. So she blows up her car, and I guess is what we're led to believe is the school parking lot?
I felt like she was, like, down by under a bridge, and I don't know where she was supposed to be.
Exactly, because I think Sheriff Ethan, when he comes to arrest Clark later, spoilers, when he comes to arrest Clark for this, I think he says something about the school parking lot. But you're right, it looked like, because when I saw the scene, I was like, did she just go drive down by, like, the dam?
That's what it looked it like up. To me. Yeah. And the thing is too, like, I feel like, especially in that scene that you just referenced, I feel like Clark was probably home all night. He probably should have had an alibi at the time that the fire happened. It's just
right. Cause immediately after this, we cut to the Clark at home, and he's at this point, he's telling his parents about what had happened with Desiree coming to seduce him. And as you mentioned earlier, Dan, this is when Martha gets all upset. She's like, I'm calling the school board tomorrow. You know, I'm like, thank you, Martha. Someone takes this seriously. And when Ethan shows up to arrest him, and I thought the first thing that Jonathan would have said, oh, he's been here at home with us all night, Ethan. But nobody says anything about that.
Yeah.
But still, it's not a good look for Clark, considering he has set off two fires already.
Well, allegedly. I mean, he has, but they don't know that.
Well, not intentionally.
Right. Yeah.
So, good old Sheriff Ethan comes and takes Clark down to the station.
I have to question this. I don't know the legality. I don't think you can just arrest someone for being in a suspicious place three times. Like, I think there's more than that you need.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I watch a lot of like 48 Hours or Dateline NBC. I love that kind of stuff. And they'll know that somebody did something, like murdered someone, right? But until they like have all the evidence lined up, you can't just go arrest people.
Yeah.
You know, because if they don't have the case, you go to trial and falls through, and then it's like, oh, no double jeopardy. They get away with it. So you got to make sure you got this thing locked down. You don't just take, you know, a tip because, you know, Desiree had called the sheriff's department or something and said she saw Clark blow up her car.
Yeah.
And that's all you're gonna take. I mean, yes, the circumstantial evidence does not look good for Clark, but due process, people.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, they do it differently in these small towns. And
That's probably what it is, especially, well, but even then,
Sheriff Ethan. How can you forget it? Jonathan says it every time he shows up. He's like, Ethan.
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 I bet you he'll have a long and prosperous career here on Smallville.
Oh, I can't wait to see the next, you know, 8 seasons, you know, 9 seasons of Sheriff Ethan on this show.
I'm just saying, you know, especially since he's BFFs with Jonathan, you would think that maybe he would give him a little leeway and, like, you know, be like, hey, listen.
That probably comes around at the end of the episode.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
But yeah, so, you know, the next scene is the next day, and Martha has gone to, she goes to the Talon to look for Nell, who's like, yeah, with Nell. When's the last time we saw Nell?
Yeah.
But she runs into Lex instead because he's, you know, closing down the Talon. They have a good scene here because I feel like, you know, Martha and Lex, both very strong characters. Annette O'Toole and Michael Rosenbaum, both very strong actors, don't get enough scenes together, no. I feel. And this scene just shows you how great they are together because, you know, obviously Martha is extremely angry and disappointed in Lex for what he's doing, not just obviously to the Talon, but to Clark specifically because, you know, she's like, my son is in jail and your wife put him there. And he's like, well, Desiree's my wife and I have to support her. And she's like, well, being married doesn't mean you just agree on everything, just like how me and Jonathan disagreed about you. And he didn't want to see the good in you, but I did. And maybe he was right. And just you know, tying all these bigger themes that have been going on with these characters throughout the show up to this point into this one scene is great. And I love this scene.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite scenes for sure. Mama Kent is awesome. I mean, she's just amazing. And she's definitely the heart and soul. I mean, she shares that with Jonathan, obviously, but she is just a woman full of integrity, and having her go up against Lex, even in his, what did you say? His not inebriated state, but his mind, pheromone fueled.
His under the influence state.
Under the influence. Yeah. That's right. Yes. His, you know, it's good because he is obviously ridiculously smart, but you know, he just can't, compete on her level. And it's awesome to see that.
So then while has gone to have this conversation, Jonathan has gone to talk to Desiree, which in retrospect was a very, very bad idea.
Yeah, yes, it was.
I mean, no, nobody knew exactly what was going on here.
It's true. And we don't know. I'm curious because for obvious reasons, we don't know this. But does she also have influence over women as well? Or is it just because she's... I don't know. Like,
well, it's like that episode of Star Trek: The Animated Series where there's like this love potion. You know what I'm going to talk about.
Oh, yes.
It's called Mud's Passion, and there's a love potion, and when you take it, you know, members of the opposite sex will fall in love with you, but members of the same sex will just become your really, really good friend. So I think there's some of that at work here, but. Yeah, I thought the same thing as well. At this point, nobody really knows she's a meteor freak, so there's really nothing to... There's no reason for concern here, I guess. I mean, they think she's just a, you know, a manipulative woman. And, hey, Jonathan Kent can hold his own, right? But he's no match for the pheromones, right? Right. Although, also, when he shows up, at, you know, he goes to Luther Mansion, and Desiree's taking a swim, a topless swim. Mm-hmm. And she comes out of the pool, and she's like, oh, hi, Mr. Kent. And he kind of, like, shyly looks away and throws a robe at her. He's like, I'd prefer to have this discussion fully clothed, if you don't mind. So, good for you, Jonathan. Stand up for those morals, man. They have a little back and forth, and he's going to leave. And he's like, I thought I could come here and reason with you, but I guess not. And she's like, oh, Mr. Kent, wait. And then she just drops her pheromones on him and hints that, you know, you're going to have to do something for me first. So that's going to come into play here at the end of the episode.
So this is number two of Under the Influence then,
yes,
right?
Yes, this is plus one more Under the Influence for Jonathan Kent now. So surprisingly in this episode, there's only two of these. I mean, we see her do it to Lex a lot, but I think, yes, it would be unfair to continue to to add up the tally board for that. So much like the hospital visits, I have one per customer. Same thing with the mind control, under the influence, possession, that kind of stuff. So,
right. So
meanwhile, Clark is in jail. He's in the county jail or whatever. And Lana and Chloe visit him. They've done a little more investigation. They found out all this information we had mentioned before. Desiree, she's a gold digger. But more importantly, she was with her boyfriend during the meteor shower. So, you know, they were probably, well, you know.
Yes, that's exactly how the episode puts it. What does she say?
At the throes
one
of
guess
passion
at what they
or something?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. It's,
high pheromone state.
Yeah, it's strongly suggested that perhaps her and her boyfriend were engaging in certain activities.
Yeah, certain adult activities. but you know, the episode really embraces the awkwardness of all this, and that's why I love it so much. It handles it so well, because if they hadn't done it just right, it would have come off as really cheesy or really stupid. And because they have fun with this absurd concept, it works so well, I think. They leave because, you know, Sheriff Thiessen says, all right, time's up, ladies. I'm like, what? He's in county jail. He doesn't have his visitation time limits. I mean, come on. So they have to go. But then Clark realizes, oh, my God, my dad went to go see Desiree. We've got to stop him. So what he does is once again, using the new power of the episode to his advantage, he sets a fire at the police station. You got to think this makes it worse for Clark, right?
Yes, you would think that would be the last thing you would want to do if you were Clark, but okay, he gets out, he does escape
just in time too, because as we see at the Luther Mansion, Lex is he keeps trying to fight this pheromone under the influence, and he's confronting Desiree about a couple things, and he's like, you weren't planning on killing me, were you? He's just kind of joking about it, but he shouldn't have been, because Jonathan Kent busts in with his shotgun and he's gonna kill Lex, and it's pretty awesome. He like cocks the shotgun. It's pretty awesome entrance for him.
Yeah, and then cut to commercial.
Right, yeah.
Of course.
And then we cut back to commercial, and instead of just shooting him, they decide to, you know, Desiree gets kind of monologues a little bit, and you know, classic villain downfall. Clark busts in and he sees all this going down, and Jonathan shoots the gun, and you know, I'm not a firearm expert by any means. But a shotgun, doesn't it fire like a lot of things?
Yes, I thought so too. That was like more, I thought it was a shotgun when he first did it as well. And then I'm like, wait a minute, is that a rifle? Because that's what it looks like.
Ah, it might be a rifle. Okay.
Yeah, but it feels like it's a shotgun with the way he cocks it and everything. And I'm like, I think it was just kind of presented confusingly. I'm not really sure. Believe me, I am no firearm expert either.
Right. But yeah, the one bullet is a much cleaner solution for Clark to solve. So he sees this bullet, and you know, we get Clark speed here, where everything slows down. We see the bullet traveling, and I don't know, if I were Clark and I had a new power I wasn't entirely sure how to use, I would have just, you know, done the old standard super speed, get in the way thing, grab the bullet, push Lex out of the way, do something, right? But he's like, you know what? This is a perfect time to test out this power I'm not entirely confident in right now to save my best friend's life. And he uses the heat vision on the bullet and it melts.
Yeah. And I was thinking the same thing. Yeah. Okay. So you don't have a bullet heading towards Lex at super speed, but you now have molten lead coming at him. And I don't really know. It's probably a little better, I guess, but you would think you would still get burned or something from that. I don't know.
I guess I thought it like vaporized it, or it stopped it in its tracks. I didn't think about it still coming at Lex.
Well, yeah, no, it is kind of depicted as melting, evaporating. I don't know, but which I'm sure probably would have smelled terrible. But yeah, you're right. He doesn't really know the limits of that power, and he, this is the first time he's going to test it, and it's like, oh. Yeah, I was with you. I'm like, why doesn't he just stop the bullet with his body and he doesn't have to worry about this kind of stuff? But
right. Faster than a speeding bullet, it's been established. Yeah. So seeing that Lex is unharmed, he's you know, on the ground because he had, you know, ducked. He would not have made it in time, but he still ducked. Desiree looks over at Lex's handy dandy, you know, drink bar, breaks a bottle of alcohol onto Lex, and then proceeds to set him on fire with a lighter. And I'm like, oh my God. It's just got hardcore, man.
Yeah, and Lex is screaming because, well, obviously. Because
he is on fire. So Desiree's making a run for the door. So this is a solution that only Heat Vision could have solved. Clark decides to heat up the handle of the door. Good thing she chose the right handle and not the left handle, or she would have escaped.
I mean, she could have still escaped even after she burned her hand, but we don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, right. But I mean, have you ever burned yourself on something from the oven?
Yeah, no.
I mean, come on. I mean, if you grab, like, imagine just grabbing onto like a 300 degree pipe. I mean, that would, oh my gosh. So I would have probably reacted the same way she did, to be honest. But then, you know, Lex grabs a giant red curtain off the wall, which is, I guess that's probably a Superman reference of some kind.
But of course, it's
but
red.
But it's so subtle. Yeah. I don't mind it. I actually thought it was pretty cool. And I guess he just does the whole... Does Lex do the stop, drop, and roll thing or not? He just kind of flails around, doesn't he?
Yeah. I don't think he's trying to put it out. I think he's, like, in too much pain at that point.
Have you ever been set on fire, Dan?
I have not. I must admit.
I've sort of been set on fire. Like, I was out camping with some friends once, and, you know, it's really hard to start a fire because, you know, we're suburb kids here, you know?
Right.
I'm not really adept in the wilderness lifestyle. So we're trying to start this fire, me and a few friends. And we keep spraying lighter fluid on it to try to get it to go further, right? And I'm standing, out of all of us, I'm standing close to the fire, and then it just kind of erupts, and I see it go, like, all over my leg, and I start just jumping around and doing crazy stuff. Because, look, when you get set on fire, your first thought is not to stop, drop, and roll. It is, oh, my God, I'm on fire! that is your thought. And I kind of shook it out, and I don't know if I really got on fire or not. Like, it might have, like, brushed my leg, but, look, in those 2 seconds that lasted forever, I really thought I was, like, on fire, and I was freaking out. And they're all laughing at me and stuff. But anyway, that's as close as I've been to the situation. So be that as it may, Clark saves the day. Lex's fire is put out. I guess it was so quick that he didn't really have any burns or anything. He didn't seem too affected by it the next time we see him.
Yeah. I also don't know why Clark had to heat vision the door handle because, I mean... How far is she going to get in the next 30 seconds? Like, he easily could have caught up to her afterwards.
Well, I think, you know, he's trying to not give away a secret, right? So, I mean, if he goes and catches her, that's just another thing he has to explain. You know, if she's incapacitated unexplainably, you know. I mean, and that's what's cool about the heat vision, though. He can do stuff, and that's what they were saying. So the creators were talking about, he can save the day in ways that are, you know, not obvious to everyone around him, which will help him keep a secret.
Yeah, that's true.
So we're still talking about this heat theme here. It's not over yet because we have a final scene with the Kents back at the farm, and Martha's cooking muffins. And I always mention this on the podcast because I think it's clever little creative touches. Martha is using these gloves to get stuff out of the oven, and she just, you know, hands one to Clark, and he doesn't have gloves or anything, so he sets it down, no problem. And then Jonathan walks up to grab a muffin. He's like, oh, ow, ow, it's hot. So
yeah. I love that little stuff that they do like that. Like, you know, or like when you see Jonathan lifting up something and Clark just comes over, does it one-handed. I like when they do stuff like that. That's so cool.
They're talking about how Lex gave a statement and all the charges against Clark were dropped, and he says, considering Clark's age and the fact that he saved Lex's life, a stern warning will be all that Clark has given for escaping from jail. But I think like you were talking about earlier, Dan, I feel like that's a little bit of Ethan and Jonathan being buds, helping Clark out there.
Yeah, and also if you kind of think, it's really hard to do this, but if you think of Clark as a 15, 16 year old boy right now, it makes a lot more sense. It's tough when you have Tom Welling playing that character because he doesn't look 15 or 16. Mm-hmm. But if you think like, oh, he was, oh, you know, you could just explain it away like, oh, he was scared or he, you know, he just wanted to leave.
Well, yeah, he plays the vulnerability well. Like in this episode, he really is like scared about the heat vision because it's a very destructive power and he hasn't dealt with it before. So, you know, Tom Welling, he looks too old, but hey, I'll chalk it up to him. He's an alien. Right? We don't know what 16-year-old Kryptonians look like. Come on.
Well, to be to be fair, 16-year-old women don't look like Kristen Kreuk either, so that's okay. But yeah, no, I understand what you're saying completely.
Yeah, and then you know, the heat analogies are still not over. They're still on. They're laying it on thick because Clark's up in his loft. In the next scene, he's reading Fahrenheit 451 by Ray Bradbury. So, nice little subtle. Yeah. Subtle touch there, but, you know, nice. So Lex comes in to just check in on Clark, and they talk for a little bit, and he explains that him and Desiree are getting an annulment. And Lex says, lost control, based on his passions, and he won't let that happen again. Although he will for pretty much the rest of his life.
Many times, yeah.
But, you know, that's like his weakness, you know. And people, I mean, I don't know. You say, like, oh, Lex has a girlfriend here and there, and, yeah, part of it's for show. Like, oh, yeah, I'm a rich, powerful guy, and I have a sexy woman by my side. But part of it is, like, it's his insecurity. It's his looking for companionship. So, I mean, there's lots of layers to everything Lex does, and that's what makes him such a great character, you know?
Yeah. I kind of wondered, too, what happened to Desiree? I'm not really sure they could charge her with anything. They just kind of drop it, of course.
Well, I guess... I don't know. I don't know at what point they've officially recognized, you know, meteor powers in a court of law, right?
Yeah, I doubt it's happened yet.
They could convince. They could convict her or charge her, I guess, of attempted murder by trying to convince Jonathan to kill Lex, and, you know, setting up. I mean, at worst case, it's framing Clark for something, I guess. I mean, I don't know. But I mean, it all depends on, like, if the world at large believes these superpowers exist, these meteor powers, and they kind of have to at this point, right? Because so much has happened.
Well, no, I don't think so, because it's still considered a crackpot theory, like that the meteors are had done all of this damage and stuff. So,
but
I don't know.
What about the guy that freezes people, and the girl that can control bees, and the guy that can do memory, and the invisible guy? You know, there's so much evidence here.
Well, yeah, okay, Chloe. If you look at the wall of weird, yeah, but nobody else knows that. Nobody else, like, looks at that stuff. So it's. I certainly don't think it's applicable in the court of law yet. That's for sure. I think I don't know. I just think that they would have trouble finding any evidence, because if they could, they could put her away, because they mentioned earlier in the episode that she had people kill her two ex-husbands. Or two? I can't remember.
I think it was one. I think it was just one. I'm not sure.
Yeah. And then, of course, she tried to do it again with Lex, but she didn't actually do it herself. And so I was just curious. I'm like, well, I wonder what happened to her.
Well... spoiler alert, she does not return in Smallville. I would like to see her again. I mean, I enjoyed her character, but it's kind of a one-note thing, right? Like, once you know her, what she's all about, it's pretty much it, you know?
Just don't let her get close.
Yeah. So our last scene here is Lana and Clark, another episode ending on a Lana and Clark scene. And this time he goes to the Talon to Lex says, in the end of his conversation with Lex, like, hey, you know, don't wait too long with Lana. You know, they're pretty much talking about finding a middle ground between the way Clark reacts, which is like, I'm not moving forward with anything, to the way Lex just reacted to Desiree. Like, oh, yeah, we're going to get married right now. We've known you for a week, right? So Clark kind of, this is the impetus for him to go talk to Lana. And he shows up at the Talent. I don't know what day of the week this is or whatever. We haven't really played that game this week, but I think everything kind of falls in the line. There's no glaring inconsistencies of which day it is here, mainly because school is a big factor in this episode for a change, right? He shows up, I don't know, 8 o'clock at night at the Talon. Lana is there trying to record her video message to Whitney, and we'll get to that here in a second. But he says, hey, I just thought I'd come help you out with the repairs. I'm like, what? Like, such a random, that's like a spot, you know, in Spider-Man movie with Tobey Maguire. He's like, oh, I was in the neighborhood. I had to take two cabs and a bus to get here, but.
That's a good reference.
Thank you. They pretty much have their back and forth about, oh, wow, Clark, why is it that, you know, she could convince everyone with her pheromones except for you? And, wow, you know, lucky you were there. And how did you escape from jail? And she starts this whole line of questioning. And this is something I was talking about in the last episode when we were talking about Vortex, is Lana this season now has the plot line that Lex had in the first season. Clark saved Lex in a very miraculous way from a car accident and the pilot, and then Clark saved Lana in a very miraculous way from, you know, the tornado in her truck in the season premiere. So she is, like, really starting to be like, what is up with Clark? What are all these things? But unfortunately, I mean, that's an interesting plot line to have, but unfortunately, it makes almost every conversation now between Clark and Lana about lies and secrets and all this stuff, and it really wears thin after a while, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, this is, how many times have we heard this passive aggressive, but I don't believe it. A relationship can exist based on lies and deceit. Do you, Clark? And it's like, oh, here we go. Yep, this is where it starts. Yeah, I get very, very tired of this. Honestly, I'm tired of it after this first episode. But, you know, it is what it is, and it's part of Smallville, so.
Yeah, for better or for worse, it is part of Smallville. So because this conversation doesn't really go the way Clark was hoping, I guess, he decides, you know what, I better get back to the farm. So I'm sorry, I'm not going to help you with anything. But to be fair, she was trying to record her video message to Whitney. So Clark says, okay, I'll leave you to that. And he leaves. And once again, this conversation pretty much implies that, yeah, you know, we weren't fair to each other. We weren't honest about things, about how we felt. And, you know, that ties together with her trying to get Clark to tell her all his secrets, which is just a very, very unfair position to put Clark in, Lana. Just because you want to be honest about your whole life doesn't mean everybody else needs to. And Clark leaves, and Whitney starts her message over to Whitney. Whitney is a girl's name. So, okay. Always thought that. I don't know any real life male Whitneys, but I know several female Whitneys. So I'm just saying, it's one of those names that's going to go either way. But anyway, Lana records her goodbye message to Whitney, and it cuts off right at the point she says, I think we should break up. You know, it like leaves you hanging for no reason, right?
Yeah, I don't know what their idea with that was. But here's the thing that's even worse than that to me. Lana is sending her boyfriend basically a Dear John letter at the end of all of these super nice things that everybody else is saying to him. So he's going to be over there. He's going to get this video. You know, you're going to get Pete and Clark and all these other people talking and like, hey, man, stay safe and be cool. And, you know, we love you. And then all of a sudden it's going to be at the end. It's going to be Lana saying, by the way, I want to see other people. I'm like, man, that is such a gut punch. Like, that is a terrible thing to do to a person. Oh, man, that's awful.
That is.
I was like, that is.
You can just imagine him sitting. That's so funny, Dan. You can just imagine him sitting there and be like, oh, you know, watching through the videos. You know, it's like, I don't know, it's like 30 minutes long, all these people talking. And at the very end is Lana like, yeah, let's break up. It's like, that's the worst.
Oh, jeez. This is one of the many reasons I very much dislike Lana, but that's okay.
Oh, man, that's funny. And, you know, ironically, I didn't think about this until rewatching the episode for our podcast here. She does the exact same thing to Clark at the end of season 7. Now, I know it wasn't of her own accord. Like, she was manipulated into it.
Oh, yeah.
But if you recall, Lana sends, spoiler alert, everybody. You know, I don't really know how I handle spoilers on the show. I just kind of go where the conversation leads us. But she sends Clark a very similar video message at the end of season 7. And as we find out, she was coerced into it. But that's what happens, and it's very similar. So would you rather her have ghosted Whitney and stopped responding to his emails?
Well, no. I would have rather her just sent him a personal message just from her and not put all these like frills and niceties in the beginning because – you know, he's not going to like get anything out of that once he gets the last bit of the
message.
Yeah,
really just jerking the emotions all around. That's really not fair.
But, yeah,
and really that's the note we leave the episode on.
Yeah, not a great ending, but that's okay.
I was hoping I'd find you.
Hey, Lex. How you feeling?
Like I'm waking up from a bad dream.
You really loved her, didn't you?
I thought I did. I filed for an annulment, which my lawyers tell me should be final in a couple of days. I'll let the police deal with Desiree.
And when that's finished?
Try to be more cautious. I let my passion get the best of me. I won't make that mistake again.
Lex, I don't think having passion is such a bad thing.
You're right, Clark. Passion for life and work and friends is great, as long as you keep it in check. I should take a page out of your book.
How do you mean?
Well, you deal with Lana. I've always told you to go for it, but you don't. Even now that the quarterback's out of the picture.
Well, I want to, believe me, but Lana needs to work out her feelings for Whitney first. I can wait.
Don't wait too long.
Heat got an 8.7 out of 10 on IMDb. Quite a high rating, which I would agree with. This episode deserves a high rating. And Neil Bailey from the Superman homepage would agree. He gave it a 5 out of 5. So high praise on the internet for this episode. Dan, how do you feel about it? What would you give Heat on the letter grade scale that we do here on Always Hold On to Smallville?
You know, I think I'd give it a B plus. It's really good. I really like the Powers episodes. I thought it was a little less than subtle with the name Desiree and the heat wave and all that stuff, which we mentioned before. But it's good. It's really good. It's funny. And, you know, there are some plot holes and stuff, but nothing too crazy. And it's kind of establishing a new norm for season two. So it's good. I really enjoy it. And I love going back and watching these old ones.
Oh, yeah. I would give this episode a solid A. Like, this is one of the most enjoyable episodes of the entire series so far. Just so fun, you know, and that's what's great about these early seasons of Smallville. There's still a sense of joy and optimism and fun. You know, they get some seasons get pretty depressing for a while. Stuff gets pretty dark, yes. You know, and this is back when these characters are still, they're so young and naive and, you know, their whole lives ahead of them, right? And this should, the show really embraced just having a good time with these concepts and these characters. Like no better episode than these the episodes where he gets his powers, embraces the fact that this is a young man going through puberty, growing up, learning to deal with things, and that's the analogy, right? It's the whole thing of Smallville. Puberty is superpowers, right? That's the whole, you know, one of the cruxes of the show. And this, it just executes so well, and it's so funny. Yeah, it's not like you said, they lay on some things pretty thick. The heat, all that stuff, unnecessary. But unnecessarily so. Like we, like you said, we get it. Okay, we get what you guys are trying to say. But in my book, I give this an A. So Dan, the series tally board is our next order of business. We have a new category, which is exciting to add to the series tally board: weddings. It's plus one on weddings because Lex and Desiree got married. That even though it lasted less than a week.
yeah, it's sad. It's tragic, really.
But you know, I have a feeling that that Lex will. Has more than one wedding in his future.
You think he's going to bounce back?
I think he will. And then also we have Under the Influence. We have two Under the Influences in this episode. We have Lex and Jonathan because they both fall under the influence of Desiree's pheromones. We also have a plus one for episode titles said in episode. Heat is said several times by several characters in this episode. So that brings us up to 8 total for the series. And we have just a retroactive one, product placement Pete. This is one of the many things that Craig Brennan and I talked about off microphone last time we were recording our episode on Vortex. And I added it into the tally board last week, but I didn't add it into the actual, you know, I didn't make a note of it in the podcast. So I'm going to let you guys know we have a new category, product placement Pete. And that's at 1 for back in the season 1 finale, Tempest, where he says, yeah, Ruby Zero! Craig and I kind of talked back and forth about it, but yeah, bottom line, he's pitching some Remy Zero deal, you know, some music. So anyway, so that's our that is our tally board as of now. Now our Bechdel test. Unfortunately, this episode is a fail because Lana and Chloe have their scene, but you know, half of it's talking about Clark, and that's that for the Bechdel test. So all right, well, that's gonna do it for this episode of Always Hold On to Smallville. I'm talking about heat. Talk about heat. It's like down in Houston, it's like 95 degrees today. So, I mean, these guys be passing out with heat waves. With you guys don't know the meaning of heat in Kansas. I mean, I wonder how hot it actually gets in Kansas. I legit should have looked that up, and I will at some point. But
I'm anyway. Sure it's got to get pretty warm.
So, Dan, so if people want to find you on the internet, where can they find you?
They can head right on over to Twitter, and my username there is 1UpDan. That is the number one, not the word.
And as for me, you can find me personally on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoreOnZach. And you can find the show at AlwaysMallville on Twitter with 1S. Look us up on Facebook at AlwaysHoldOnToSmallville, or send us an email at AlwaysMallville@gmail.com. Once again, with 1S. Well, I'll be back next week talking about Duplicity with our friend Lance Lasseter. He makes a return to the show. We'll talk to you guys then. And until then, always hold on to Smallville. Baby, I'm tired of talking. Grab your food and let's start walking.